I'm quorum the chair of the transportation committee. With us, we've got Halsey Wilson and Capsner, excuse me, for the delay there. I'm thinking of your name.
Okay.
You look different, so I had to think, who is this lady? And the time, of course, today is 1:35 p.m. on Tuesday, the 6th of February, 2001. We'd like to hear the bill that was held over from the last committee hearing, which is House Bill 55. That's the only thing on the agenda for today. And with that, I'd like to ask that Larry Dietrich from BEC step forward. And Larry's going to address for us the issue that we closed our meeting out with last week, and that was the spill response fund.
Mr. Chairman, can we get the most recent CS? I didn't get the most current CS.
Is that not in the packet, Mike?
No. If I may, Mr. Chairman, legal asks that we wait until after we pass our emergency amendment and then other modifications to the bill.
Okay. Thanks.
Anyway. When we concluded the meeting on the Thursday, we had addressed our concerns what appeared to be satisfactorily by the committee. That seemed to be the consensus, with the exception of the spill response fund, and there was still some concern that the fund might be depleted by the enactment of this legislation to the extent where it would draw funds away from existing programs that are associated with tank replacement, things like that that have been ongoing for many years. And I asked Larry if he would look into that issue and make a presentation to us to address that third and final concern. So, Larry, take it away.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. What I would propose here, maybe start with a brief overview of the response fund and how it works, and then follow that. I believe it's my understanding you have in your packet then a projection done by Ledge Finance, and then we'll work through those numbers and then discuss. That should give us a good picture of the overall health of the fund. So for openers here, I would refer you to this one. We'll start here. I'm not sure if the committee is totally familiar with the response fund or not, but I'll give you a brief overview, and that way it'll fit right in, I think, with the projections done by Ledge Finance. Okay, the thing you hear referred to as the fund frequently is also referred to as the 470 response fund, which was the bill number when the legislation was originally passed in 1986. It's been amended, I think, two or three times. The most recent amendment then was in 1994. The other most significant amendment was in 1990 following the spill when they imposed a nickel a barrel surcharge. That's when it first came online, was in 90. And then in 1994, the amendment made by the legislature split the nickel into a 2 cent and 3 cent account. So where it's at right now, the thing that's called the fund or the 470 fund is basically made up of two accounts, and that's what this graph attempts to portray. If you look on the left side, that's the 2 cent account. The 2 cent, when they split the nickel, is a surcharge that's imposed on crude oil production in Alaska. Okay, and that revenue goes into a surcharge account, which is the top account, and is then subject to appropriation by the legislature into what they call the response account. Okay, the intent of this account is for the big spill, the next big catastrophic event in the state. And so this account has a feature on it that allows it to accumulate to a $50 million balance. And when it hits that balance, it's preset in the system then that the tax shuts off. So the $50 million response account is full. It's been full since shortly after the nickel was split in 94. It's actually a little bit over the $50 million, and the tax has been shut off since that time. What happens as soon as the balance is drawn down below $50 million, the tax automatically turns back on, and it's done on a quarterly basis by the Department of Revenue. And it will stay on, and then until the balance is brought back up above $50 million, and then it shuts off again. That's how it's designed. So this account is, the uses for this account are reserved for the imminent and substantial events that happen in the state. So we try to use this fairly conservatively. There are controls in the statutes that govern our access into this account. For example, anytime we go into this account, we have to advise both the legislature and the governor's office in writing within 120 hours of how much we're drawing and what for, and those go out on a routine basis. So this is used fairly seldom over the years, and we have not, it has not yet dropped below the 50 since the since it was created when the tax, the nickel was split into 2 cent, 3 cent account. Now, on the right side is the 3 cent surcharge, calculated the same way. It's on the volume of oil, crude oil production in the state of Alaska. So this is both North Slope and Cook Inlet production. Goes into a surcharge account, and then that's subject to appropriation into the account that you hear about the most, the prevention account. Okay? This is the account that was set aside to be used then for the activities that are in this box down below here. And I'll just go through this. This is for the state's preparedness costs. It's for contingency plan reviews, response preparedness and training, restoration activities, storage tank assistance funds, matching federal funds, and a host of other things. These are basically annotated right out of the statute. These are the allowed uses then of the prevention account. And this is the one that is tapped for the operating budget requirements or capital improvement budget requirements. We do not go over onto this side for operating or budget unless it's an emergency. Funds work pretty good over the years. Any questions on that? If not, I'll go right into the ledge finance. Okay.
Go ahead.
I have a question.
Yes.
So when we hit the 50 million and it shuts off, you just automatically that money just goes on into whatever else it always goes into, and then when we get below that amount, it kicks in again and we collect it.
Through the chair, the $50 million account is managed by investments for the department. So this money is pooled with other money, and I think it's actually pooled into a fairly large account that is then invested them to achieve certain rates of returns. And so there is an actual investment policy for this money that is used by investments then to generate an interest rate of return that's sustainable and is conservative. And we've actually recently had meetings with them to also talk to them about, can we be more aggressive about how that $50 million is invested without risking it. And it's a little difficult because the problem with this is you may need that principal on an emergency basis. And so if you have certain investments and you're forced to sell and you're in an aggressive investment, so their advice to us is to leave it in the more conservative. And it's generating, I'd say, on average, roughly around 5% through conservative government-type instruments. And so it's parked there generating interest. The interest is also generated by these other accounts. And so it does generate an amount of interest that is actually appropriated then into the prevention account on an annual basis. Any other questions?
Larry, there was a discussion during the last meeting that the Ledge Finance, on behalf of the Senate Finance Committee, was going to do some projections for us. And I have a sheet in my packet, as everybody else should as well. It's a sheet prior to the one that you just made reference to. When you get a chance, could you please go over that projections and just give us an idea as to what the fund is going to look like in future years?
Yes, I will, Mr. Chairman. I understand that this is the, you should have a sheet from Ledge Finance that they put together that has three fiscal years on the left side, FY aught 2, aught 3, and aught 4. And that's what I'll cover here. Is that the one,
Chairman? Yes, it is.
Okay. To give you a brief overview how the, first of all, I'll be talking about the prevention account now because the $50 million account, I think we've already covered as to how that works. And if you look, excuse me, I'll wait for, has everybody got the right sheet there? Okay, when you're looking at the Ledge Finance report here, the left column here is showing you the balance in the 2 cent or the $50 million account. And you can see that the balance is $51,276.5, and they projected it out as the same for aught 3, aught 4. And notwithstanding any emergencies that might happen that would cause us to draw into that, those are good numbers and a good estimate. So unless the state has to use it, it should continue to be parked there and generate interest. The next column is the prevention account. And if you'll see at the top, they have it broken down into the prevention mitigation account and the prevention surcharge account. And going back to your graph here, the surcharge account is the account where the 3 cent crude oil production goes and is deposited and is held. The prevention mitigation account is a separate account that is where all our penalties, cost recovery, program receipts, federal funds, and other revenues are parked. So this account is showing you now the projections that will be generated by each of these accounts, which are then the fueling sources for appropriation into a single account, the prevention account. So looking again at the ledge finance, the prevention mitigation account will go to the left side of that middle column right now. The $5,379,000 item there is a three-year average for the fiscal years 98, 99, that is the average of the amount of money that we've cost recovered and brought back into the prevention mitigation account. So that number, if you look for '03 and '04, has been the same. They've used the same number to project out for future years what that revenue stream will look like. The number on the right side, the surcharge account, the $9,300,000 number, is the actual amount that's generated by the 3 cent right off the production of crude oil. And if you look for '03, that number jumps up to $9,800,000, and in '04 it jumps up to $9,900,000. Those projections are provided directly from the revenue forecast that we talked about, I think, at the last meeting. So those are Department of Revenue figures. That's their projections on what the actual flow will be for those years. If you add those two together, you then and you add in then a carry forward from the prior year, you end up then with the estimated balance for the beginning of '02 of $27,726,000. Here's how the balance is, real briefly, is calculated. You take the balance in the checkbook or the prevention account essentially on June 30th, okay, the end of the fiscal year. And then we add to it then the projected revenues for the next fiscal year, and then we deduct from it the projected expenditures. And then you end up with a new balance at the end of that year. That's all this sheet is doing. So the $27 million here includes the projected revenues from the prevention mitigation account, the projected revenues from the prevention surcharge account. It adds them together. There's also a carry forward balance that's on the preceding page to arrive at $27 million. You then subtract out the estimated operating budget, capital budget, and storage tank fund transfer, and you end up with a balance of $4,744,000 on June 30th, '02. This would be right here.
Mr. Wilson?
I'm sorry. Where are you getting 27? Because I don't have 27 anywhere on mine.
Through the chair, if you flip, I would ask Mike, do they have the FY02 sheet in their packets?
No, I was not provided.
Okay. To answer your question, the carry forward balance from the prior fiscal year that Ledge Finance calculated on another sheet has that number on it. It's on a separate sheet.
Okay.
And they just brought it forward onto this sheet.
Okay, so that this number here, then, this is the beginning balance from FY02. That should be 27?
Yes.
Okay, so where it says 25, it should be 27.
Yeah, I think you've got an older copy there. It should be 27.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that results then in the balance for '02, and then the same process is used for '03, the same process is used for '04. And so this is really, this is good because this is long-term fiscal planning for the response fund is what we're engaged in here. And that's when we looked at the fiscal note here. We're looking at the out years and to what extent the $141,000 in the out years for the fiscal note, what kind of impacts it will have on basically the fund balance. And when you look at the out years here, as we indicated before, the percentage of the surcharge amount is relatively low, and therefore we think it's sustainable over time.
Maybe you can answer my question a little more simplistically here as far as the impact of the fiscal note on that fund. Can you roughly guesstimate as to, say, from a percentage perspective, what that would be? I mean, you're throwing a lot of numbers out here, and I appreciate that.
Yep.
But what in relation does this expenditure for this legislation have to that fund? Would it deplete it 20%, 30%? Or can you put it a little more simplistically just for the benefit of myself?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Again, just using the $141,000 and comparing it against the revenues stream from just the surcharge account, it would be somewhere between 1% and 2%.
1 to 2%.
Yes. And if you add the mitigation account and the other interest streams, it would be reduced even further.
Nevertheless, it is a pretty good chunk of money. You know, we're talking as much as a third at its highest point in the evolution of this legislation here. You're projecting in fiscal year 2003 about a third of $1 million, 297, and of course goes down from there.
Correct.
One thing I'm going to suggest to the full finance committee, I'm not offering it as an amendment here or as an addition to this legislation to be passed out of committee, but it's going to be a suggestion to the full finance, is a reduction in DEC's overall budget that would accommodate the additional monies being spent for this legislation. But again, it's not a part of the legislation. It's just going to simply be a recommendation for myself. And what I'm going to do is produce this thing and show it to the members of the committee, and if there's anybody that has a concurrence with this, you're certainly welcome to sign on. But I wanted to note that I think it would be prudent if we maintain a no-increase budget philosophy with any new legislation that we do pass. And having had the DEC budget in the past, I feel like there are some areas in DEC that we can reduce to offset the increased expenditure with this legislation. So I'm going to just simply make that recommendation to the full finance and take a look at it. Yes, Representative Fukish, and
I just want to make sure that you emphasize that it's your recommendation and not the recommendation of the committee, because I don't agree with it. I think DEC has suffered enormously at the hands of the legislature, and there's a lot of areas in Alaska now that DEC can't even address because of the lack of funds. So I appreciate your consideration. I appreciate seeing it, but I'm not supportive of it. I think that this legislation is exactly what that fund was intended to address. And I think the fund that is there now is the litigation fund, and the other one, this is the kind of legislation that was meant to address in the future. And the future is here now, and we need to take care of this. It's 1% is a very small amount of impact on that fund, and I think that we're doing the right thing, and we ought to go forward.
Thank you. I'll definitely make it very clear that the memorandum is just for myself and not from the committee, and those were other members that wish to sign on to that memo. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Regarding the impact of the $141,000, where would you think out of all the things that are listed on that page 3 that 3 cents goes to, such as cost recovery, state and regional master plan response office, where do you think that the most likely hit would be on?
Yes, Representative Scalzi, through the chair, in looking at the down the road here and how the fund has been used and what's would be reduced over the years, the legislature, let's see, 2 years ago, passed Senate Bill 128, which dramatically changed the financial assistance program for the underground storage tank program. And it set a new threshold, and it put caps on the amount of grants and loans that would be made available by the state. We have completed the upgrade and closure portion of that. That was a 10-year item to get the leaky underground storage tanks pulled out. So the upgrade and closure work is essentially completed, and the cleanups remain to be done. So we would anticipate that the amount of that work is going to start to be reduced here over time because the program has been contracted down by the legislature. Paying $1.6 million a year out of the fund to the rural above-ground fuel storage tank problem in rural Alaska. And this is fueling $1.6 a year. It comes from the response fund. It was originally paid by the response fund back when the problem first occurred, when they threatened to stop fuel deliveries. And so this was seed money to get that rural above-ground fuel storage tank program fixed. There is now the TAPL funds available, which is injecting $20 million a year into that program. So there's another area where potentially the response fund could be throttled back. Still another one then is the state facilities. The response fund has also been used for cleanup of contamination, leaky tanks of state-owned facilities, maintenance issues. And we like to think we're making progress on that, and we'll get over that hump, and we'll not have to spend so much money in the future on that. So those are some of the areas, I think, in the out years that is part of long-term fiscal planning that where there will be some shifts or changes potentially.
And just follow up, how that $20 million that you spoke of, that TAP fund or whatever it was?
Yes.
Was it the Trans-Alaska Pipeline Fund?
Through the chair, yes, the Trans-Alaska Pipeline Liability Fund. It's known as the TAPL Fund, and that was... that fund was basically done away with when the Oil Pollution Act of 1990 at the federal level was passed. And at that time, there was a $500 million liability fund for Prince William Sound. And so they did away with that account. And it was absorbed by a new $1 billion oil spill liability trust fund at the federal level. Some of the residue that was in that account was originally the state's. And that finally, just last year, rolled back to the state. And $20 million of it came down through the Denali Commission to be used for bulk fuel upgrades. And $18 million went to the Alaska Industrial Development Authority. And that's to be used for remediation at the very same facilities. So those are two significant new revenue streams to work on that problem.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any more questions? Larry, did you have any further remarks at this point?
No, if we can be of any further assistance or answer any questions, I'd be glad to do that. Appreciate the time and consideration.
Thank you very much, Larry. There is one more item I do wish to discuss with the committee here, and that is there's an additional fiscal note here that was brought to our attention. And it was a fiscal note brought forth by the Department of Transportation. And if you might turn to that, it should be tabbed with the green marker there on the right. And what this basically reflects, and I'll have DOT address this, but it basically reflects the cost of compliance with the vessels that we have in our marine highway system. So with that, I'd like to ask that George, step forward. And I can't pronounce your last name, Gene, but if you're here, if you could come forth and how do you pronounce your last name again, George?
Capacci.
Okay.
George Capacci, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm the general manager of the Alaska Marine Highway System. And I just, Department of Transportation, it's the new one I was basically here to answer any questions you might have about the fiscal note, but just to explain to you that as a state agency, the Department of Transportation has a in-place response system, an in-place incident command system, if you will. We have our statement of fiscal responsibility, but what we would be doing under this law would be contracting with under this regulation, we'd be contracting with spill organizations to have spill equipment available for our use. The vessels of the Alaska Marine Highway System, the nine vessels of the Marine Highway System, fall under the purview of this regulation, and we would not be carrying that equipment on board, but we would make use of the cooperative equipment that'd be stationed throughout the coastal Alaska where our ships operate. A lot of the other, and what you see here is our estimate based on the current pricing scheme that's available to be part of a spill response, to have that equipment on call and have it available. And this is based on our estimates right now, if we were to sign up. In the future, when there are more potential customers, if you will, in the cooperative, we envision the prices, the cost to the Department of Transportation would be less. So that's what you see, the fiscal note you see there is the maximum amount. We have seven vessels that operate exclusively in Southeast Alaska, two vessels that operate exclusively in Prince William Sound in Southwest Alaska, and the Kennecott with her cross gulf is included in both areas. And I'd be available to answer any questions that you might have about our fiscal note.
Representative Scalzi.
Mr. Chairman, just for clarification, the contractual expenses are for training, I would assume, and life equipment. You could tell me what exactly the $29,000 is.
Certainly. Through the chair, Mr. Scalzi, the $29,000 is intended, or it is an indication of our first year costs for complying with this regulation, and it's not for training. It's mostly for contracting oil spill response equipment, having that equipment available to our use to be able to respond within the certain time limits, and to be able to contain any potential spills that we would have. We would not be contracting for incident command management services. We have a structure within the Marine Highway System, within our ISM code compliance, within our safety management systems to cover those incident command structure. But this is the cost we envision for having the equipment on standby, if you will.
And as a follow-up, there's an annual cost of $23,500. What's that for then?
through the chair, the higher cost in the first year is to accommodate, there's some initial membership fees or some one-time initiation fees. You see in the Southwest line item, there's a, for the response agencies that are out there right now, they charge an initial one-time initiation fee to be a member of the cooperative, and then the annual fees are less than that in the ensuing years. That's why there's a little bit more the first year for those one-time fees.
Okay, so just for clarification, it's a contractual agreement, but you're actually, it's the availability of the equipment for response.
That's correct.
Right, okay.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are these the people that you contract with, they also contract out with other vessels that aren't with the Marine Highway System, right?
Through the chair, that's correct.
Familiar with that, and I just assume it's basically the same. They're there kind of for every all of you, but you all have to pay them to be there in case you need them.
Through the chair, yes, that's correct. And the prices, again, to state that, that we have the estimates we have in here are based on the current prices that these response agencies would charge to have that equipment available. If there are more, and we envision there will be more, all vessels 400 gross tons or larger would be involved in this regulation, that, that there'd be more to share the cost, and so the actual cost would probably be less than this. We anticipate that we'll be less than what you see in our fiscal note. We don't have no way to predict that right now.
Any more questions? Well, I think we're close to the point of taking action on the committee, and I'd like to request the will of the committee. I'm satisfied with the answers, even though I don't necessarily agree with the answers, and I'll get into that momentarily here. But you know, we seem to identify as a committee three primary problems that we were seeking information on. That was the issue of regulations, and we dealt with that amendment that Ogun had last Thursday. The employee increase issue, we've addressed that, I think, satisfactorily. And lastly was the spill response fund, and we need an explanation on that and the additional fiscal note. So unless there is something else that committee members have a million concern about, I think we're pretty much where we need to be. But having said that, what would the will of the committee be?
Chairman, I'd like to move that we forward this next committee of referral with attached fiscal notes.
Okay. That would be, is this committee substitute, Mike? Committee substitute for House Bill 55 as amended, including the attached two fiscal notes from DOT and DEC, as well as individual recommendations. Are there any further comments in regard to this legislation before we, well, actually we don't need to vote if there's unanimous consent, but are there any further comments at this point? I would like to just, for the record, note in closing continued concerns I have, and it really doesn't change from what I initially noted at the onset of our discussions and dialogue. However, I didn't want to be an obstructionist. I recognize there's a lot of people that support this bill, and frankly, I haven't heard of anybody that does not. Not that there isn't anybody out there in industry, but nobody has actually contacted my office and noted their concerns to me. Just from a philosophical standpoint, I have concerns about, you know, additional regulations and hiring new employees, spending more money, and regulating, you know, as many as 500 vessels. And I'd prefer a more simplistic approach to dealing with this issue, perhaps increased penalties or whatnot. But those are things we talked about before, and there's no reason to really rehash all that. But nevertheless, I don't think it would be prudent for me to attempt to block this bill, so I'd like to be a part of an effort to move it on to the next committee referral, and just note my recommendation. So is there any objection to moving this bill out of committee? Hearing none, the bill passes with unanimous consent. Thank you very much, and meeting's adjourned.